When the police arrived, they said the details of the 911 call were so sketchy they thought it might be a prank. Inside, though, they actually found three people dead and one with a gunshot wound to the foot. But why would an intruder leave the one person who could identify him alive? This is the story of Alexander Jackson, the Iowa college student who said a stranger, not him, killed his entire family. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. There's some new news in the case of Alexander Ken Jackson, so I wanted to start from the beginning for those of you who haven't heard of this case before. At 8:23 a.m. on June 15th, 2021, Alexander called 911 and said he and his dad had been shot in their Cedar Rapids, Iowa home. He said a black man wearing dark clothes and green shoes had broken in through the walkout basement door. When the police arrived, they actually thought they were walking in on a prank call because Alexander had given so little information. But they really found 61-year-old Jan Jackson dead on the floor, just as his son had said. 20-year-old Alexander said he and the intruder had fought over the family's .22-caliber semi-automatic rifle, and Alexander had been shot in the foot in the process. What he didn't tell them is that his 68-year-old mother, Melissa, and his 19-year-old sister, Sabrina, were also dead in their bedrooms. Everyone except him had died from multiple gunshot wounds. Authorities took Alexander to the hospital, but while there, they questioned him for 4 hours. He said the family had dinner and watched a movie. They were close like that. He and his dad cleaned one of their rifles before their trip to the shooting range the following day because it had previously jammed. They left it by the fireplace. Alexander went to sleep on the porch, which was screened in, until the ring of about 10 gunshots woke him up. He ran down to the basement to see his dad's body on the floor and the intruder still in the house. He and the man struggled over the gun, and then when the intruder ran out of the house, he crawled to his bedroom to get his phone and call 911. He said he wasn't even sure how he got shot in the foot. He might have even accidentally shot himself in the fight for the gun. But he said he definitely wasn't the one to pull the trigger when his dad, mom, and sister died. He did admit, though, that he hadn't been getting good grades at the University of Iowa, where he was studying business. His dad had told him to get a job to cover half of his tuition or get ready to move out. That sure seemed like a motive to the cops. Investigators told Alexander that it would be awfully weird if the supposed intruder didn't know the family and was just on a murderous rampage. But nothing was stolen, so a murderous rampage seemed like the only reason for the break-in. They said it would be awfully weird if a stranger came to kill people without bringing his own weapon and hoped to just find one in the house. But that's what Alexander was trying to say happened. The investigators tried to give him an out, to be empathetic and say that, hey, family dynamics can be difficult, and hey, it's hard to deal with your father's expectations when you start to become an adult. Because the thing was, they were pretty much sure that Alexander was making this whole intruder thing up. They checked the family's security cameras and the cameras at surrounding houses, and there was absolutely no evidence that anyone approached the Jackson residence. They also found that someone was using Alexander's phone at 6 a.m. to access social media when he said he'd been asleep before the gunshots woke him up. He told them he didn't know who was using his phone.
Do you think it'll look better when an entire family's been murdered in cold blood and the person responsible continues to deny it and shows really no remorse? Will just hear me out. And I mean, that makes it look like intentional homicide, that you wanted to massacre a family. Whereas we've given you every opportunity, we've confronted you with all the inconsistencies and all the evidence. But you're not.
Right.
Okay, so if a jury would listen to you, say you're trying to help us, then they can see the ones we've seen and nobody comes or goes and all of that, and then you continue with this story and I'm trying to help you. It really looks pretty cool. The fact that after this has happened to your family, that you're claiming you're trying to help us. Because what are you doing? Huh?
I want the guy found.
Yeah, well, we found the guy.
Now, I'm entirely biased because the woman investigating him happened to be a former contestant from Survivor and MTV's The Challenge, and you might know that I have terrible taste in TV, but I just love the bit at the end of their interview. Alexander says, "I want the guy found," and she says, "We found the guy." They charged him with 3 counts of first-degree murder and held him on $3 million bond. His trial was delayed for over a year as the defense waited for discovery from the prosecution, but the case continued to make news as the two sides went back and forth about what would be allowed in court. At one hearing, Alexander's lawyers argued that pervasive and inflammatory media coverage would tarnish a jury picked from his own county. They presented Facebook posts about the case that had hundreds of comments and said that since Alexander was at this hearing in his jumpsuit, potential jurors would know he was in jail. I guess people are biased against people in jail. But the county attorney rightly pointed out that Alexander's lawyers had kept him from attending every hearing up until this one by filing a waiver for his attendance. But now, when they were arguing that the jury would see him at this hearing in his jail jumpsuit, they hadn't filed a waiver to keep him from attending. How convenient. This county attorney also said that the whole point of questioning jurors is to weed out the people who can't be impartial. It's always interesting to see the different tricks each side uses when we, as casual observers, just want the most fair trial to make sure they got the right guy, you know? In the end, the judge ruled that the media coverage was uniformly factual, not overly emotional, and that Alexander's trial would take place in his own county. Trial finally began in January 2023, with the assistant county attorney saying in his opening that Alexander's family was shot many times, and that the evidence showed no one else was in the house that morning. Alexander's dad, mom, and sister were each shot between 2 and 5 times in the chest, the arm, the face, even the eye. The fingerprints on the gun were clear and unsmudged despite Alexander's story about a struggle, and the only fingerprints belonged to him. Alexander's public defender said he and his dad were close. They played video games together. They were planning a trip to the shooting range the day his dad was killed. Alexander would never kill him nor anyone else. She implied that the investigation was botched because the police focused in on Alexander and were so sure of his guilt, they never even tested the shell casings for DNA. They didn't seem to mind that the only blood on Alexander's was his own, which would be unusual for close-range shootings. They didn't care that the security cameras at the house didn't show the entire yard. But some construction workers who had been on the street behind the house told officers that they didn't see anyone. And of course, the neighbors also had security cameras. A canine officer who was first on the scene also testified that his dog didn't pick up the scent of any intruder. As the trial continued, a crime scene investigator testified that the case for the rifle was found under Alexander's bed, and that yes, while fingerprints are usually delicate and easily smudged, the prints on the gun were good quality, meaning that a struggle over it was unlikely. There was no sign of forced entry into the house and no sign of a fight. A puzzle on a coffee table near the body of Alexander's father was completely undisturbed. This investigator also said that the gun was unusual enough that he had to watch a YouTube video on how to load it and that it would have needed to be reloaded in the middle of the murders, meaning that it would have been difficult for some stranger to come into the home without a weapon, grab the gun from the fireplace, and figure out how to reload it when he needed to in the blink of an eye. Alexander's lawyer pointed out that one of the palm prints on the gun couldn't be identified, so it could totally be from an intruder. The investigator said it was just bad quality, so that's why it didn't have a match. An expert on police dogs testified for the defense that the canine officer mishandled his dog, and that's why she didn't track an intruder. He said the dog was either too excited or too overheated and was panting through her mouth rather than smelling through her nose. On cross-examination, the county attorney pointed out that this expert hadn't been a canine officer since 1991 and only agreed with German standards for training dogs, so perhaps he was a little biased. In closing arguments, the county attorney said that Alexander admitted that he never called out to his other family members to check on them. He didn't call out to them because he knew they were dead. And man, the prosecution's version of events is just bleak. They say Alexander was crouched down by a sofa when his dad came downstairs, and he shot 3 times from there. Then he came to stand over his father, who had fallen face down, and shot 2 more times at close range. He shot his sister from the doorway of her room while she was in bed. He tried to kill his mom from the doorway of the master bedroom, but finished the job just inches from her. He killed his mom from just inches away. Whatever was going on with this guy, I just can't imagine doing that to your family. Neighbors said the Jacksons were really good people, nice people, and good neighbors. They moved from Iowa from Oregon in 2011, and people around them had no indication that the family had any problems. Alexander was a former Eagle Scout who had done volunteer work in the community in the past and received 34 merit badges. A friend said he was mild-mannered, not violent, and had played flute in the band in high school. His sister was also a student at the University of Iowa, and friends said she was kind and made people feel accepted. Alexander's dad, Jan, worked in IT, and his mom, Melissa, was a photographer. Alexander said he and his sister had arguments, as siblings do, but that he loved her. He said their parents treated them and loved them equally. One of Alexander's Boy Scouts friends said he was respectful of his mom and wasn't the type to get angry. His band director said he was an A-plus student and was surprised to learn that his college GPA was a 1.9. So you have to wonder if something new was going on with Alexander, something that caused this change. The county attorney said he had $30 in his bank account when his family died, so maybe he made up the story about the intruder so he could inherit their $2 million estate. A forensic and clinical psychologist spoke to A&E TV and said that sometimes criminals don't have any obvious risk factors. He said that Alexander's brain wouldn't have been fully developed at age 20, and maybe he didn't feel socially or culturally ready to be on his own. Maybe the idea of his dad telling him he had to move out was terrifying or infuriating. After about 5.5 hours of deliberation by the jury, Alexander Jackson was found guilty on all 3 counts of first-degree murder. In March 2023, he was sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole. And the thing that got me interested in this case is that in January 2024, the Iowa Court of Appeals heard his appeal. Alexander's defense said the prosecution didn't sufficiently establish his identity as the killer, and the cops didn't properly investigate his side of things. They said the jury should have been told that the police are allowed to lie during interrogation and that their statements shouldn't be used as evidence. I'm not sure what that refers to, but I wonder if it has something to do with the detective saying so confidently on the video, "We found the guy." His defense also said that Alexander's police interviews were irrelevant, amounted to nothing but theater, and shouldn't have been shown in court. Considering that the interviews offer the only inkling of a motive we have, that Alexander was failing college and may have needed to move out, I'd say they were pretty relevant. And finally, his defense said that officers were allowed to testify as to what neighbors and construction workers said they saw on the morning of the murders, which is hearsay. The jury was later told not to consider this as evidence. The appeals judges rejected all of the arguments except for the hearsay one, but they said that even the hearsay didn't have an effect on the overall trial. There was plenty of other evidence. So Alexander's convictions stand. For now, he'll serve life without parole. Thank you to thegazette.com for all of the reporting. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.